your grade is the average of all your quizzes, plus the midterm and final, which counts for one third. Got it? Also, there will be no eating. E-A-T-I-N-G. No eating in this class. You get used to doing your own business on your own time. That's one demand I make. Just like you wouldn't want me to come to your house some evening and discuss U.S. history on your time. Understand?
Yes, sir.
This guy's been stoned since the third grade.
Yes?
Yeah, I'm registered in this class.
What class?
This is U.S. history. See the globe right there.
Really?
Hey. May I come in?
Oh, please. I get so lonely when I hear that third attendance bell ring and all my kids are not here.
Sorry I'm late. It's just like this new schedule's totally confusing. I know that, dude.
Mr. Spicoli.
That's the name they gave me. Hey, you're ripping my car.
Yeah.
Hey, bud, what's your problem?
No problem at all. I think you know where the front office is.
You dick!
Pre-recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
By noon, I need them 8,000 hens moved into their new cages. Sometimes they don't want to cooperate. But you give them a good shaking, that'll settle down for you.
Do the chickens have large talons?
Do they have what?
Large talons.
I don't understand a word you just said.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
Aloha, Mr. Hand.
Learn about Cuba having some food.
You dick!
That's right. Hey!
Isn't it our time, Mr. Hand?
There is so much awesome in that movie. You know, that's another one of those movies that, you know, my hair could be on fire, to use the Jerry Seinfeld description. My hair could be on fire and I could watch that movie sitting, laughing, big belly laughs.
It is the quintessential high school movie.
With my scalp melting away.
So many big names in that movie. Forrest Whitaker as a kid.
He
still, he looked exactly the same. The guy's never changed.
What happened to the guy who played Damone?
Damone. He turned up in a couple other things and then he vanished.
I have a feeling
he's in low budget porn right now.
When I first saw that, you know who I thought that was? I thought that was Alex Van Halen.
Ugh.
It's a weird reference. I'm going, hey, look, it's Alex Van Halen.
Gross.
Anyway. Hey, it's a Bob and Elvis Show. I'm Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania. That's Elvis Dingledean there in Nebraska.
That is the smug and nasty Elvis Dingledean. A few boos from the chorus this week.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that in a second. This is a show brought to you by Bubble Genius and Pomegranate Journeys. Yeah, you got booed. It was the whole Keith Olbermann thing, huh?
Yeah, the dividing line, the line has been drawn in the sand between your fans and my one fan.
Well,
I'm the smug and nasty one.
I didn't get nasty with you necessarily. There was one guy.
No. One of your, I said something, and then you said something, and we quarreled over the whole. Did you get all the tinkle washed out of your big boy pants over the Olbermann thing? By the way, is
nice.
It all rinsed out now?
Right. Okay, fine.
You dick.
We ended up on two different sides of the ideological spectrum on the whole KO thing.
Yeah,
and then we got to wrestling. And you said, you know, way to argue like a big boy. And then one of your fans called me a douche. And then I said, oh, man, you disagree once. And, you know, if you agree, you're the beloved comic relief. And if you disagree, and then some jackass chimed in and said, well, let me tell you something. You're not the beloved comic relief. You're smug and nasty.
I didn't see that. That's crazy. I did not see that at all.
Was carried on in direct messaging because I was so ashamed and humiliated with myself and really really c- considering, you know, giving up my podcast career because, you know, one negative review.
Oh, really? Like, really?
I am smug because I am the smartest person in the world. Yeah. So I'll own the smug, but nasty? Come on. Fuck that.
Well,
fuck,
I mean,
the person who said that.
Here's where the argument started. I mean, because I was really pissed off about Keith Olbermann being suspended. And here's my line of reasoning. You got between the three major cable news networks, you've got 72 hours of a day, 72 hours of programming a day. Mm-hmm. Four of it hosted by liberals. Four out of 72 hours. Four. Reduced then to, with Olbermann suspended at that point in time, it was indefinitely reduced down to three. And one of those hours is Ed Schultz. I don't know what the fuck Ed's doing.
I don't know.
I don't know about
that. That's fucking mine.
And maybe you can mix in Cenk Uygur in there, but his star is just now rising. Yeah. And it's certainly not Dylan. You can't count Dylan Radigan. Dylan Radigan is, I don't know.
Just
he's
insane.
Dylan Radigan a year ago was what I like to refer to as a spazzy white guy in Lower Manhattan. He was a CNBC, market watch, stop trading kind of one of these guys who, everything rotates around, what Citibank is doing that day.
And, I just want to buy a used car from Dylan Radigan.
That's right.
I mean, that's what he seems like he should be doing is selling me used cars.
So
Radigan was the name of a bad guy in a Disney movie, so I can't take him seriously.
Radigan.
The Great Mouse Detective.
Really?
Fantastic, very underrated classic hand-drawn Disney film, The Great Mouse Detective, Basil of Baker Street.
Yeah. Now, see, I've always wondered, though, if Dylan Radigan is his real name. Because it sounds like a jive name. I mean, it sounds like...
Make that up. That's awful.
I'm Brick Tamblyn. It sounds like one of those kinds of names.
Yeah.
So your thing was... My line of reasoning was here that Keith was not suspended just because of this minor contract breach. I mean, because people violate contracts all the time and they're not suspended. There's other shit happening behind the scenes. Clearly. I mean, we have evidence of that. There was an ongoing conflict between Olbermann and Phil Griffin. There's been just ongoing conflict between those guys behind the scenes. I mean, it doesn't take much digging to find that out. And then MSNBC has become sort of the both sides suck ass network lately.
Oh yeah,
and Olbermann is sort of in this zone on that network where he's certainly more bombastic than any of the other hosts, including Matt Allen and all the rest.
So his bombast is what is the reason I can only really watch him two or three times a week versus I'd never miss Rachel. It's just the bombast factor.
So put yourself in Phil Griffin's shoes then. You're Phil Griffin. This guy violates some of his, a term in his contract. You already don't like him. You're going to probably pull that trigger a little more quickly.
No, I have no problems with the how and why of it all. I'm absolutely certain there was something more than... my problem was the liberal tweetosphere's knee-jerk pants wetting reaction. The whole exclamation point hashtag boycott, just hissy fit.
Why? I mean, what was wrong with that? I mean, why can't in the context of Twitter, why can't we say, look, we want to preserve that fourth hour of liberal programming out of 72?
Well, that's what cracked me up. And I tweeted something to the effect of, when we're not absolutely stamping our feet and demanding there's no such thing as liberal media, we're demanding that there should be more of it and pointing to the 4 hours that we do have.
Right.
It's kind of funny. So my whole point was that if the story had been Glenn Beck suspended from Fox because of donations he didn't disclose to conservative or teabagger causes, we'd have all been cheering and masturbating and throwing graffiti in our own faces. If that had been the story, we'd have been like, "Yeah, fucking hell, boo, and suck it, Fox," and it would just be a day-long tweetgasm of righteous hoorah. But when the tables are turned and it's our precious, quarantined 4 hours of liberal media. Oh, Jesus Christ. But what about, there was just all these false equivalencies going.
Well, no, you're making with the false equivalency here. because there is no comparison. You've got two major media outlets, and I'm talking about Fox News Channel and all of AM talk radio. Yeah. All right, controlled by conservatives and conservative interests.
Yes.
All right. But we know they lose Glenn Beck. That's it's certainly going to be a triumph, and I'm certainly going to applaud that because he's a ringleader of that whole thing. Mm-hmm. You lose one of the 4 hours that we've got.
But we didn't lose
in
he
all
was back
of major
by
media.
Monday.
Well, he's back by Monday. We didn't know that on Thursday.
Oh wait, yeah. Well, some of us did.
You did.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got
Keith called me.
You got the call, right?
Phil's but now calling. What I love about it is now Twitter, all the liberals on Twitter, hey, we did it. Ooh, as if MSNBC is watching their tweet stream and going, oh well, fuck, we really made a mistake here. Let's reinstate. Viva la Twitter, my ass. It was just, I don't think it was a publicity stunt. I don't think Keith was in on it, but I think absolutely management went, you know what, fuck this. He brings in a lot of cash and blah, 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 bottom line, you know.
Well, there's the rub. I mean, my point in all of this, in the context of the four tweets we fired back and forth with each other before everyone else took over, you don't take one small line item from a contract and say breach and suspend your highest moneymaker, your highest rated show. You do not do that unless there's something else going on. And that was my whole point. Then you started in with conspiracy, i.e. How do you argue with some
secret meeting in some secret lair where all these conservative money-grubbing CEOs got together and went, Keith Olbermann's got to be reined in. Jesus Christ, did you hear what he said the other night? Well, let's suspend him for some bullshit thing in his contract. Let's see how that works out. I don't believe that's true.
That's a stretch. You're reading into what I was saying. I never said anything to that effect. I said there is a desire among television executives to rein in anyone who's seen as bombastic, who might actually tarnish that executive's reputation. All right, so this guy Phil Griffin, he's got to go around in TV executive circles. He's got to deal with guys like Joe Scarborough and some of these other douchebags who have to say, well, you know what. Both sides are getting loud and crazy and insane, and you know the context of the Stewart rally just not too long ago. I don't think Olbermann helps us that much.
That's my thing. In those circles, I think those people are right. There's absolutely no content equivalency between Keith and say Glenn Beck. There's no content equivalency whatsoever. But there absolutely is a sort of bombastic equivalency, a sort of can't take it entirely seriously sort of a thing when there's all the shrieking and hand wringing and paper throwing and whatnot. That's why I tend not to watch as much Keith as I do Rachel, because Rachel is just wonk city political junkie. I mean, it's the master's class, and Keith is sort of the freshman running around snapping towels at everybody's ass kind of thing.
Mm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. My thing is, if the executives had to pull a management chain thing on Keith to make him know who's boss, so be it. They did it. It seemed to have worked. Whatever. Great. My problem was this now apparently boycott seems to just be our new thing as live. Boycott. Fuck. Boycott. It's like this, the new Sarah Palin show. Boycott. Boycott TLC because she's got a fucking show. And I'm like, no, let's watch that shit. That's an hour a week of gold. And I was right. She is editing her own show.
Yeah.
Sully had that out the other day. I was like, oh, see?
Yep.
The more cameras pointed at that stupid bitch, the better.
Yeah, we talked about
that last
week.
But everybody else is boycott.
Right. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine being the tech, being the engineer cutting together that show with Sarah Palin hovering over your shoulder?
No. That's what I said last week. God. The hardest working person in Hollywood right now, the most thankless job in the world, is the editor of Sarah Palin's Alaska.
So, but yeah, I mean, but again, there are boycotts that work and that make sense. And sometimes, you know, we stamp our feet a little bit and that's the only thing that we can do. There are other times when, yeah, sure. I mean, enough is enough. I mean, it's we got to pick our battles a little bit here. And that was always my argument against Lee Stranahan, not to bring him back into the conversation.
Oh, God, I don't think I have the strength.
I know. But, I mean, when it came to criticizing the Obama administration, I always felt like, well, we've got to pick our battles here. Otherwise, the screeching is just going to turn into white noise and no one's going to pay attention. Correct. And so, but boycotts, well-timed, that are forceful and necessary. Again, I've got to underscore that with Keith Olbermann, again, one of 4 hours in all of cable news hosted by a liberal, and he was being eliminated. I mean, God only knows. I mean, Schuster was eliminated for much longer, and we never knew when he was going to come back. And so who knew when Olbermann was going to be back?
I just think. I mean, like, boycotting Beck makes sense to me because his rhetoric is dangerous. I mean, it is literally I'm not being, you know, hyperbolic. It's literally dangerous. It incites people to violence, to craziness, and it preaches to a very specific kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That boycott makes sense to me. And the people like Stop Beck and Beck Basher and those guys, they do good work because they go where the money is. They go to the sponsors and they put enormous pressure on, you know, otherwise rational, reasonable sponsors to not pay into that fucking nonsense. Mm-hmm. But everything else is just, so let's cut off our nose to spite our face with MSNBC. Let's not watch, you know, all the other good content because, you know, they made this one sort of rash, ridiculous move. So anywho.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anyone was going to stop watching Matt O or any of those shows. But I mean, you know, like, I think it was well timed. I think it was effective. I think it absolutely had something to do with him coming back on the air so quickly.
I don't.
I mean, what else could have convinced Phil Griffin to change his mind?
I think it was just it may have moved it up maybe a day or two, but I think it was just a very symbolic thing to do, sort of a kick him to the curb and then bring him back with his head hanging a little bit. You know, I don't think it was ever an indefinite thing. Yeah. They can look at a spreadsheet, for Christ's sake. At the end of the day, it's all about ad buys. It's all about the money.
Yeah.
It was just a power play. That's why they did it on a Friday, so they could let it smoke out over the weekend and come back rosy-nosed and red-cheeked the next, you know, on Monday.
Appropriately enough, there was just a major cat fight right behind me. I don't know if you heard it.
Nice.
It was
fucking cats are taking over the farm of doom. They are taking over.
But here's where I parted ways with you on this. Not necessarily on the disagreement in terms of you know, why Olbermann was suspended. What was the machinations going on behind the scenes? Which was, I mean, my issue was, here I'm presenting my argument as to what might be happening behind the scenes. Here's why this is an outrage and why we need to do something about it. And then your response was, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, it was it?
Yeah, I mean, something like that. It was, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but it was something along the lines of, rah!
Angry faces.
Rah! Yeah, exactly.
Loud noises! Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think I was probably encapsulating because what I opened up a window in my tweet deck to see everything that was coming at you, and I think I was wrapping all of that into one big bundle of fun. It was directed also at your legion of fans, and they certainly came out to defend you against my smugness and my nastiness.
Right, so, and then yeah, and then
congratulations.
That's right.
You're awesome.
Then you got a bunch of this.
You dick.
Well, you know, it can always just be the Bob and Bob show. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
Enjoy.
I just crapped my pants. So look, I mean, speaking of dicks, Sarah Palin was just a big time dick this week.
What a segue. Do you have audio of her Pennsylvania speech?
No. Yeah. You know what? I think I do. Let me see if I can bring it up here.
She is doing an impression of herself now.
Yeah. Here it is. Yeah. I mean, it's literally that shrill and screechy.
She is doing an impression. She's doing an. It's like, what's that guy's name that comes on Oberman who sounds like an impression? Sounds like a guy doing an impression of Phil Hartman doing Bill Clinton. It's like that now. Yeah. She, Sarah Palin, is doing an impression of somebody who does a really bad impression of Sarah Palin. I almost had to throw my TV out the window, Elvis style, like shoot at it.
Yeah.
When I was listening to this, because her face and the chin was extra jutty and the teeth were extra clenchy and the eyes were extra crossed and just, oh my God. You know, we liberals say it all the time. We'll move to France or whatever. I swear to God, I will. I will leave this country. I will go to Australia if in some way she becomes in charge of me.
Yeah.
That's crazy in a bottle right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
psycho.
You're exactly right that she's doing an impression of herself. And I think I think she's evolving really seriously into that, because what she does is she likes to take, you know, I can see Russia from my house and all that bullshit. She likes to take that and spin it around and be, you know, I think she's trying to learn some sort of lesson from Reagan, where Reagan was really effective at being self-deprecating once in a while.
Yeah.
And I think she's taking that to a new extreme, where she's being so self-deprecating that she's deliberately self-satirical. Yeah, she's become a caricature of herself.
It's terrifying. It's like the hand, and her fans in ape, like with Reagan, we were all kind of like, oh, isn't that cute? He's kind of old and he's just delightful. And look, he's making fun of himself. He's kind of a gentle old clown. He should go take a nap. With her, it's like literally she gets caught reading notes off her fucking hand, and people are running around writing on their hands like it's a crucifix, like it's fucking stigmata. Yeah. Like, you know, oh, I mean, they take her so seriously. With her fans, there's no sort of, oh, ha, ha, Sarah, what a card. It's like, no, I will write on my hand, and then I will beat a liberal to death with that hand for you, Sarah. That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that ever in politics, where you could get caught being that big of a fucking retard, and your fans, your legions of supporters lionize you for it and honestly take you seriously about it. That's terrifying to me.
Yeah, it becomes a point of solidarity.
Scary.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes a point of solidarity. The stupid.
Yeah.
We're all rallying around the fact that she's retarded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And unashamedly so. I don't know. It's terrible. When I saw that last night on Maddow, the clip they ran, because I'd seen the tweet thing and I'd sent some tweets at her about the cookies, about the laissez-faire cookies, about, you know, trickle-down cookie economics. And but I hadn't seen the clip, and then I saw it. And I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. She's become, and I love it, because her narcissism, there's no way she's not running for president. There's absolutely no way.
Oh, yeah.
And her narcissism, the Republicans very shortly now, very soon, probably first of next year, the Republican machine is going to have to destroy her somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, when they come at her, when something comes out about her, some truth that, you know, some record, some medical thing, some whatever, it's going to come from the right, because they've got to be terrified of her at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's already starting to happen. I want to get back to the cookie shit, because that really fucking pissed me off this week. But I mean, you've got Peggy Noonan. I mean, Peggy Noonan in her column wrote this. The point is not, you know, because, oh yeah, Palin was comparing herself to Reagan, because Palin has a reality show and
Reagan was on Bedtime for Bozo.
Yeah, and she says, yeah, Bedtimes for Bozo.
Bedtimes for Bozo. She said Bonzo first, and then she corrected herself to Bozo. It's like I think she was trying to, again, self-satirize there, but she's still fucking retarded. But so, yeah, Reagan was what? The head of one of the biggest unions in – wasn't he the head of the actors guild, the Screen Actors Guild?
SAG? Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's a union, right? Don't we hate unions? Aren't unions terrible?
Right. Two full terms as governor of California.
Oh yeah,
and plus a successful one. Plus he almost unseated Gerald Ford.
Yeah, he was a serious politician. You got to get. I mean, he was a serious guy. Didn't agree with him.
So yeah, I mean, what happened was is Peggy Noonan in her column decided to stand up for her former boss and say, you know, Ronald Reagan was a friend of mine. I knew Ronald Reagan. You, Sarah Palin, are no Ronald Reagan. And but in the process of saying that, Peggy Noonan just point blank called Sarah Palin a nincompoop. I love that. Here's the actual quote. The point is not he was a great man and you are a nincompoop, though that is true. The point is that Reagan's career is a guide, not only for the Tea Party, but for all in politics. Right. And so, I mean, I think that's the general consensus amongst establishment Republicans is that Sarah Palin's a fucking joke, which is, thank God someone sees it over there on that side.
All the establishment, you know, the power brokers should and do.
Yeah, Rove.
I mean, that's not where her base is. That's not where her popularity is.
And here's, Susan Collins. I think she likes being a celebrity commentator for Fox and a speaker and being able to provide for her family, Collins said. I think that life appeals to her. It's a lot easier to charge people up than to actually govern.
Well, Chris Wallace said that right to her face the other day. And did you see the look on her face?
No. What?
Oh, yeah.
How did I miss that?
It was on Fox News Sunday on Halloween night or Halloween morning because it was the morning I was looking for news about Ted. So I was surfing every news channel. And I went over to Fox and there she was and there's Chris Wallace. And he's like, you know, you're on TV, you're raising all this money, but, you know, he's basically trying to get her to say, yeah, I'm serious about being a public figure. I'm serious about being a politician. And he went through basically that same thing that Collins said. It was almost verbatim. And her face was priceless. Just the sort of, I would kill you with a spoon right now if I could, because you're totally in my, you know, you're in my shit right now. It was fascinating. It just her whole jaw just kind of it just, you know, just jutted with disdain.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, someone's calling me out on my bullshit act.
Right.
It was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's going to clearly take the victim posture in all of this. Oh, right.
Of course she can't. She's the no lose with her base, with the people that would vote for her. It's the no lose scenario. There's
right.
no way she can not that she can't lose the nomination. I absolutely think she could, especially with these new, you know, straw polls coming out of New Hampshire now and, you know, Romney's whole deal. No, but just with her constituency, no matter what she does, she has some kind of out.
Yeah.
You know, lamestream media. Oh, it's because I'm a woman. Oh, it's because I got tits. It's because of this. You know, nothing. She cannot lose with her constituents.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't. What seems odd is nothing seems to affect her. Like she is just she's like this juggernaut of stupid. She just keeps. She's like the Terminator, but made of entirely not of liquid metal, but of stupid.
Yeah.
And so she just keeps moving. So you fight. You know. You just fire everything out. Like she made a big fucking fool of herself twice. I mean, reading comprehension things twice this week. We'll have to get to that.
Oh, sponsors.
Today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius. Pure products, pure genius. It's Bubble Genius. I almost didn't open up my notes from Bubble Genius. So we've got to, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, where's the time go? I mean, the holidays are just around the corner. You want to do all of your shopping, all of your gift shopping at, you know, with progressive liberal businesses. And there's no finer place to start than with Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. Coolest soap and body care stuff you have ever, ever seen. Bubble Genius brings you soap and body products like you've never seen before. They've got something for everyone, from guys to girls to kitties to expectant mothers and even your best friend, your dog. And they even have a few things for your house.
Yep.
And we have a brand new Bubble Genius commercial this week. And here we go.
Attention! Buy a soldier a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Buy a soldier a shower.
Sir, yes, sir.
Do something sweet for the troops. Choose from a selection of Bubble Genius bath and body products, and we'll send them to soldiers overseas on your behalf. The holidays are coming up. Buy a soldier a shower.
BubbleGenius.com.
Yeah, I mean, today's Veterans Day. So it's,
yes, it is. We haven't mentioned that.
Excellent time to... send a soldier a shower, which for some reason I have trouble spitting that one out. Send a soldier a shower.
She shells seashells.
That's right. Today's show also brought to you by Pomegranate Journeys, the cure for the common vacation at www.pomegranate.travel. Now's the time to start looking at your springtime travel itinerary. You want to get away. Pomegranate combines several of the greatest things in the entire universe: food, wine, bicycling, and Europe, France, and Italy. Visit Pomegranate's updated website at pomegranate.travel to see new trips and a new hiking and photography trip in Italy's famous Cinque Terre. Pomegranate offers tours and a variety of skill levels for cycling and has several trips designed especially for beginners, so don't be as scared if you've never been on a bicycle before. So if you're worried about not being able to do it, don't worry about it. These tours will be the perfect introduction to the magic of travel by bike and could very well transform your life. While you're at the homepage, please make sure to visit the, make sure to sign up for the newsletter, the Pomegranate Journeys newsletter. And please do, please also follow on Twitter, Planet Palm. That's PlanetPom. And on Facebook, you can find their Facebook link right there on the website where this particular show is being broadcast from. Again, the cure for the common vacation, that's www.pomegranate.travel. And no, nothing from Virgilio this week.
Oh.
So I know, everyone's, I was really, you know, like the high point of my week is waiting for one of those songs. I just love the Bob and Elvis Show songs. That's thank you to our sponsors for writing songs about us. That's the best thing about it.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Indeed.
Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
That's right. And that actually reminds me, we're kind of falling behind on the iTunes thing. So if you, if you're listening to the show on the blog, like just downloading the MP3, that's good. I mean, we appreciate that and we salute you. But if you've got iTunes and you haven't subscribed to the podcast via iTunes, you've got to do that. And then of course you can literally stick us in your pants. Because you can download the show onto your iPod or your iPhone or your iPad. And then, well, your iPad, I don't know, you've got to have pretty big pants to fit the iPad.
Well, I don't think some of our listeners probably have a problem with that.
Ha ha! And so, right, and then you can just take that that mobile device and shove it into your pants. And so, literally, we could be in your pants,
Armistice Day.
That's right.
I was watching over this past weekend. I was watching on the military channel. It was a, like a 4-hour thing, but it was an archaeological dig of the French, of No Man's Land, of Flanders Field and that whole deal. Mm-hmm. They went out and dug down into the French countryside and found both trenches.
Yeah.
On the German side and on the French and British side.
I saw that.
The Allied side. And it was just fascinating and absolutely, I mean, fuck that war. Oh my God.
Yeah.
How awful World War I. I mean, trench up to your knees in fucking slop and mud and wet and getting trench foot, your feet basically just falling off the bone like a well-cooked pork knob, you know, just, oh my God, the stuff they found in this. And it's just, you know, people just walking around, oh, hey, how you doing? And then it's 10,000 miles of underground trenches, 10,000 miles worth. Not, you know, all in one contiguous line, or it'd be, you know, you could get in New York. But just unbelievable. Just that war can kiss my ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why you don't see a lot of glorious movies made about World War One, because, I mean, it was just God fucking awful. There was nothing I mean, heroic about it. I mean, it was literally
just ludicrous.
Yeah.
That they just, ludicrous. That they were that close. And that, you know, and just, you could, if it was me, the second week I was there, I'd have stuck my head up. I'd have just been like, you know what? Fuck this. I'd stick my head out. A sharpshooter would put a bullet in me and I'd be gone. That would be fine with me because I'm not standing in up to my knees slop, you know, for 4 years.
That's right.
I just would not do that. I would just stick my head up and wave a big bright flag.
And, you know, at 6'4", I would be in World War One. I would be known as
goner.
I'd be Private Bullet Blocker. Get up there, Private Bullet Blocker. We're charging that trench. Oh, Jesus Christ, really? Again?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, like that.
Just an awful war. Oh my god. But it's a fascinating show. If you catch it, if you can find it, it's they did this just unbelievable dig, and then when they were done, they covered it all up. I'm like, what they should have done is get massive blocks of transparent aluminum in there and put it all like encased it all, made a museum out of it, because that's something people need to see.
Well, there's a Civil War equivalent to World War One, or I would say it's just maybe a precursor to World War One. It was a battle called Spotsylvania Courthouse, and it was right there in Central Virginia. Oh, yeah. And you may have been there. It was like the first big trench warfare battle in American history. I mean, it was literally like trenches as far as the eye could see, with these like gallant bayonet charges across no man's land into the trenches. And at one point, I think it was May 12th, I want to say 1864, and it was literally like 24 hours of about 100,000 soldiers, both sides combined, stabbing each other through the trenches at like with bayonets and up to waist deep mud with just like torrential rain. I mean, it was literally like the worst parts of the Helm's Deep battle in Lord of the Rings. I mean, it was that times 1,000 and for real. You want to get it
was something.
I mean, if you want to get a taste of sort of World War One style trench warfare, but preserved in a way with, I mean, Spotsylvania Courthouse, you can still go. I mean, it's literally like right off of 95, like somewhere, sort of north of Fredericksburg. You can go, I mean, you can literally stand there in the trenches. I mean, the trenches are still there. And and that's the way it was. It was nightmarish. And that was sort of the precursor. I mean, that's sort of, that it was that kind of digging in, that sort of warfare by shovel that it was really the precursor to World War One style warfare, which was just absolutely ludicrous. It's just, I mean, you want to underscore the futility of war. Look at Spotsylvania Courthouse, look at World War One, all of it. Mm-hmm.
That any of them are awesome. It's just that World War One, you just look at it and you kind of have to just shake your head and go, what the fuck was that all about?
Yeah.
And mustard gas, I mean, it gets inside you, eats you up from the inside out. Mm-hmm. Like you had holes pushing through your face and shit was just falling off and oh my god. But then it got me to thinking, it's like, okay, so the Geneva Convention, so the chemical warfare is off limits, right? Because that's just beyond the pale. But we can drop a bomb on you, or put a bullet in you, or all these other things are all right. But the chemical gases, that's beyond the pale. That's just so ludicrous about war, that there's these rules that you can shoot somebody right in the face at 10 feet out, but don't gas them.
Yeah.
That's just cruel.
Yeah. And that's what I never quite understood about reenacting is I don't understand. Why would anyone want to reenact the horror that is war? And I know there are World War One reenactors. I mean, that's insane. Why would you, I don't know.
I wouldn't mind being a Union reenactor and pretend to shoot me some fucking rebels.
Yeah.
I'd enjoy that.
Yeah.
Bunch of fucking traitors.
But I mean, World War One reenacting, or there's that Rich Iotta was reenacting as a Nazi, for God's sake. Stupid.
Not a lot of Holocaust reenactors. Are there a bunch of Jews get together and dress up in striped pajamas?
No. But,
happen a lot.
Back to really serious issues here. Sarah Palin and cookies. The Keith Olbermann thing kind of really pissed me off. But this pissed me off more than, I would say, any news story of the last 7 days. That she would look at this, what she perceived as this Pennsylvania law, this Pennsylvania school board ruling that would ban sugary snacks from schools.
Mm-hmm. Right.
More on that in a second. So what she does is instead of climbing on board and taking the high road like a real leader would and saying, well, you know what? Maybe I disagree with this quote-unquote nanny state, whatever it is, whatever the fuck she says about, rules about kids. Instead of, taking the high road, she instead, just became this, what I called on Twitter, just a petulant dick, and decided to, instead of speaking about nutrition and fitness, which would have been an effective way to do it. Well, we don't like the nanny state, but... I think kids should be physically fit and we should promote, gym class and yada, yada, yada. Instead of doing that, she said, I'm going to bring cookies.
Mm-hmm. Laissez-faire cookies,
Laissez-faire cookies, right?
Yeah.
So she did. She brought a shitload of cookies
with her. To a $75,000 a plate speech.
That's right. And
classy.
And so, I mean, just lots of this.
You dick.
I mean, that's exactly what it was. I mean, that is just a dick move. What is the fucking point?
Right. I mean, that's why I tweeted at her. I said, so let me get this straight. Your message to children is forget all that health and fitness stuff. Have a cookie, fat ass.
Yeah.
That's basically the message. Oh, we don't need, because and the school board thing, first of all, the story basically wasn't even true. The
link that's right.
Put in her tweet had been rescinded.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Because they had to change their fucking tune. Mm-hmm. But basically it was saying that the ordinance as I read it, or what they were talking about, was, you know, the parent can pack one sugary, shitty, you know, carcinogenic snack. And after that, you get a choice from a menu of healthy snack options.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, nanny state run amok.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Children. Just children.
That's exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was childish. It was like,
yes.
I mean, what a horrible example.
Yeah.
You know, why don't she donate some of the billions of dollars that she's earning by going around and screeching for a living and doing her reality show? Why don't she pitch in with all the fucking medical bills for parents who have to deal with children who have type 2 diabetes?
Yeah. Because they're fat little fatties.
Yeah.
I watched this, you know, Peanut is really into sports and she's skinny, as thin as a rail, and just healthy and hearty. And I got her this Wii Fit so that we could, you know, when it's shitty, because pretty soon it's going to be negative 80 out here.
Ugh.
And we're going to be stuck in the farm of doom. So I thought the Wii Fit is a good way to keep active during the, you know, the freezing months. Mm. And the thing I got on it told me that my actual age is 55 and that I should basically consider buying a gun and shooting myself. because I now have video games that mock me, which is awesome. I got on it and it does this little thing where it goes doot, 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 and it's like computing. It's like a Star Trek scanner. It's like getting on the transporter pad.
Mm-hmm.
You stand on this thing and it goes, and I looked down at Peanut and I said, kind of sardonically, I said, I'm now deciding how fat you are. And she laughed and laughed and laughed. And then it came up and said, your age is, you're 55. I was like, oh
my God. Yeah.
This video game.
And then the Wii Fit goes,
says, please get off the balance board. You are, but it was fascinating. It's a great thing. And my center of balance is so off. It can tell you where it thinks your center of balance is based on how you stand. And my center of balance is basically somewhere in South Dakota. Apparently I left my center of balance several hundred miles from here. It's fascinating little gizmo. But anyway, I watch her on her sports teams, and I would say one out of four or five of the little girls on her various sport teams are these big, fat, diabetic, you know, just huge, round children.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. You know, when you and I were in school, the fat kid, and it was me after I was eight, because I got pneumonia living in Germany. I got really bad pneumonia and almost bought the farm there. And my mom rushed me back to the States that summer and fed me nothing but Burger King for 3 months. I mean, literally just crammed calories into me. And after that, I just became the fat kid. But the fat kid when we were growing up was the exception, you know, absolutely the exception.
Yeah.
And got mercilessly made fun of about it. And now it's just like, oh, yeah, look, there's another fat kid, and there's a fat kid, and there's a fat kid. The fat kid's the one selling you snacks at PE, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's terrifying.
Right.
And that's the thing. That was Sarah Palin's message. Oh, the nanny state is bad, so here, have some delicious processed flour, you know, chocolate deaf cookies here. Just feed your face, fatties. Yeah.
And I'm wealthy beyond belief, so I can afford to you know, healthcare, and I can afford to, you know, make sure my kids have the right food, whereas most Americans can't.
Oh, you know those parents aren't eating good.
Yeah.
You know they eat out of box. You know that 90% of those little kids' lunches are Lunchables.
Yeah.
She just certainly doesn't have time to pack them a a healthy lunch.
She just hands him one of those big sort of dollar store barrels of cheese wads, whatever that, you know, those
Lunchables are so god. Have you ever looked at one of those?
Yeah, they've got like, I think 32 grams of fat in one of those Lunchables.
Oh my god. I mean, it's just insane. Sodium and the nitrites. And, oh my god. Yeah.
I mean, between
whoever thought that was a good idea.
Absolutely. I mean, between that and the high fructose corn syrup, it's no fucking wonder. I mean, and it's not the kid's fault, and to a certain extent, it's not the parents' fault either. It's the shit food, and it's unavoidable. It's unavoidable. I mean, we've talked about this over and over again on the show. You cannot go walk into the grocery store and you can throw a rock and it'll hit something with high fructose corn syrup in it.
No, I'll agree with it. You have to be, I mean, when they're putting it in bread and calling that bread just like grandma makes, you know, old fashioned, Sara Lee, soft and fluffy, old fashioned, 100% wheat. And then you go, yeah, of the wheat that's in there, 100% of it is wheat. But the other stuff is, I mean, it's got high fructose corn syrup in it, in bread. What the fuck?
Bread.
Yeah.
Bread.
But I do blame the parents. There is a subset, not all of them, and a lot of it is economic, and a lot of it is, I mean, protein's expensive. We've had this discussion.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is just, oh, I don't want to put, you know, I'm not lazy parenting and the kind of parents that don't want to feel guilty about denying their children anything.
Well, when you've got middle class incomes flatlining for the last, God, I think it's the last
30 years,
exactly, since Reagan declared war on the middle class, to use Tom Hartman's phrase, 30 years of stagnant middle class wages. So consequently, I mean, people, middle class, working class Americans are going to be buying the cheapest food, which is also the worst food for you. And that's the food that you get that, I mean, that's you know, I would consider like dollar store food, like those clear plastic barrels of cheese wads that you can get. Yeah.
Anything in a box, any meal that comes in a box, like Hamburger Helper or, I mean, just anything, you know, anything that's starch derivative, it's cheap. We've got it laying around. We subsidize people not to grow this stuff. So we have to, you know, the market evolved and changed to meet this stagnating wage thing where it's like, okay, middle class isn't spending much on, you know, they don't have a lot of money for protein, but let's cram as much of this stuff into a box as we can and sell it for $1.80 and, you know, make a huge profit on it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely right. It's really hard as consumers. And I'm, you know, I'm very conscious of this and I still end up making bad choices for Peanut. And thank God she's, you know, as active and ropey and thin and tall as she is. She's very tall for her age too. So.
Yeah. Well, people are always asking me, you know, why do you eat the same shit every fucking day? And it's because, look, I mean, you're kind of cornered. I mean, you know, I'm not rolling in cash. So, I mean, I get the same stuff every day and I sort of eat the same meals every day. I kind of rotate.
Which is what?
Rotate dinner. Well, breakfast, I have a bowl of the Kashi Golin. You know what this is? This phone call right here is...
we're now going to pause while Bob talks to his contractor.
Actually, you know what? I'm not going to take that call. We have a contractor coming out to fix my fucking roof so water stops sluicing into my skylight. So stupid. But anyway, so where was I? What was I saying?
Kashi.
Yeah, Kashi. Kashi Golin Crunch for breakfast. A bowl of that for breakfast with 1% organic milk. I'm so liberal. Oh, Jesus.
No, I drink the Horizon. I'll drive all the way to Omaha for Horizon milk because I have to. They don't sell it here.
Mm-hmm. I'm the king of all liberals.
Yeah.
I'm the king of all liberals. I used to drive a Prius. I don't anymore, but I did. Jeez. When I was driving the Prius, I was the king of all liberals. And then for lunch, I have a tuna sandwich on high fructose corn syrup free bread, which is I actually eat, and they're not paying me to say this. I wish they would send me some, but Arnold's Jewish style pumpernickel bread.
That's for by name.
That's right, delicious.
Tuna on pumpernickel. That is truly progressive of you.
Yeah, that's right.
I love me a good tuna sandwich. I make the best tuna in this whole town. People come to the Farm of Doom just to get my tuna. That's not even a lie.
So look to the tuna fish on pumpernickel sandwich for racial equality.
Does sound good.
That's right.
That's cultures colliding there.
So I have
it's like the black and white cookie.
Toast. That's exactly right. Just like the black and white cookie. Look to the cookie.
There is a Seinfeldism for everything.
That's right. Then I have for dinner, I've been rotating through one of several things. I either get the Kashi roasted vegetables pizza, or I get probably the worst thing I eat, which is oh my God, this is easily the worst thing I eat. I get occasionally these Bertolli skillet pasta things, and every time I fry one up, you just dump the pasta, and it's got like shrimp and stuff in there and green beans and stuff. And you just dump it into a skillet, and in 10 minutes you've got a meal, and in 10 minutes all of my Italian relatives roll over in their graves.
Yeah, that's pretty
But then I also make homemade pasta where I make the pasta and then
you're actually making pasta?
I'm not that liberal. But I boil up the pasta and then I mix in a bunch of shit like diced tomatoes and garlic and all that crap. Parmesan.
That's lovely.
So I kind of rotate through several things. And then, I would say, the worst thing I eat is I get a chicken gyro from this restaurant near here. I just get a good takeout. But I generally rotate through the same things because there's no other options. Because it's like you go into the grocery store and it's a minefield of crap.
Of awful. Yeah.
Actually this raises a good point. And, this deficit commission... these deficit commission recommendations came out this week, and Krugman's been all over this. Thank God.
Yeah, he's so exasperating, though.
Well, yeah, but he had a good post regarding the life expectancy.
Yeah,
because there's one of the recommendations was to increase the retirement age by something like 2075, which is I haven't decided whether or not that's good or bad. Probably bad. Mm. I'm just going to assume it's bad. I haven't really, honest to God, I haven't really been following the deficit commission story this week. I'm a bad, bad liberal.
Well, Sully's got a good, check out Sully. He's pretty orgasmic over the recommendations, which concerns me because he's to our right quite a bit. He's a classic conservative. So, like I said last week, I'd vote for some conservatives if they didn't have their heads up their asses, if they had real ideas.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, here's the point that Krugman made. I think it was yesterday. He posted something about life expectancy since 1977. Okay, mm-hmm. And this speaks to the relationship between income and health. Okay, mm-hmm. Life expectancy of male workers retiring at age 65 has risen 6 years in the top half of the income distribution. Mm-hmm. 6 years longer. Wealthier people are living 6 years longer since 1977, but only 1.3 years in the bottom half.
Wow.
1.3 years.
That's really something.
And so if you extrapolate that, you look ahead another 23 years, that would be 23? No. Am I doing the math wrong? 33 years, yes. If the trend continues, then the bottom half of the income distribution will only be living, since 1977, 2.6 years longer.
I think it'd probably, there's probably a multiplier in there. I think it's probably getting worse.
Yeah.
If you think about how things were between 77 and now, things have changed quite a bit and drastically. I would say there's a multiplier in there. So there's absolutely causation and links between wealth and health and just basic education, which is just makes this Sarah Palin thing that much more egregious. Mm-hmm. Is that these are very very one of the best messages the West Wing ever got out there was that these things are it's questions for serious people. And you never got the sense that that even though the show is very myopic and rose tinted. And super liberal, you never got the sense that they took the issues lightly. And these are things for serious people. And that's why I'm supportive of Obama because I know he's a serious person. Really one of the only, really just one of the only adults in the room. Like when Biden runs his mouth and Obama just has to give him that look like, Jesus Christ, can we just be adults? I just want some adults in my politics. It's one of the reasons I don't like Robert Gibbs is he just doesn't seem very serious. I want some serious fucking people in my government to deal with these things. And the Sarah Palin thing was so childish and so the opposite of what this country needs for serious problems.
That's right. Exactly.
Pisses me off.
Exactly. And that's what pisses me off about the progressive perspective on the president.
Childish. It's unrealistic.
Exactly. Well, the bottom line is we ought to be grateful for this president just by the mere fact that he's he's got a brain in his head, and he's thoughtful, and he's serious about these things. He may not always make the right decisions, but for fuck's sake, after 8 years of retarded horse shit out of the White House, we finally have a serious man. We finally have a serious president in the Oval Office who is making serious decisions, who's being thoughtful and studied about them, and not just fucking willy-nilly flying off the handle and saying, you know, wanted, you know, dead or alive, or, you know, bring it on. I mean, the previous where this douchebag's going around the country praising his record, and this is the president who said, bring it on. Bring it on.
Basically urging terrorists to shoot at Americans.
That's right. And then he's got the nerve to say Kanye West was the low point of his presidency. Kanye West? Are you kidding me? 9/11 wasn't the lowest point?
I have no outrage left. I heard that. The part of me, the gland or the whatever it is in me that processes George Bush material is just dead. Like, I've got no more outrage for that guy.
Yeah.
I just look at him like, you're just a sad, pitiful, retarded little man. If there's a special place in hell for you.
Yeah.
I hope someday the ACLU or somebody sues you. I don't know. What is there a rule against that? Can you not? Does it have to be the U.S. government that goes after him for war crimes? Or could I just file? Could I just go to some court and file war crime charges against him? Because now he's just a douche, right? Now he's just a... Isn't he just a citizen now?
Yeah.
Well, fuck, somebody got to do that because he's just admitting to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if something happened internationally, at least. I mean, yeah. I don't know what the civil
signatory to the war crimes to you know, the international war crimes shit. You can't send an American to The Hague. They got no jurisdiction here.
Right.
Gerald McCraney, he told Leo McGarry that it's a bad idea, so the Bartlett administration passed on it.
Yeah.
Bastards.
Right. Well, you know, and I was going to ask you, too. I was going to make a special request for you and Redmond to review Decision Points, which...
I can't do it. I won't do it. I will not read that man's book.
Answer my question. That's right.
I will not do it. It would be great. Somebody suggested we call it Why Me Not War Criminal on Twitter, because we read the Sarah Palin book, me and this guy Redmond, and that was fun because it's just retarded. Yeah. But I will not read this book that George Bush... You know, I'll read it when he does.
It's got the worst title in the world too. That sounds like a garage band I was in high school. Coming up with like names for garage bands. Oh yeah, my name of my band's Decision Points.
That sounds like a bad Jonathan Kellerman novel.
It's
right?
Really you bad. Know? Really bad.
It's something you'd buy in paperback for a long flight.
Today's show brought to you by Bubble Genius, pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. Make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Elvis to get 15% off your entire order. I forgot to mention that. Literally 15%. You go shopping and you're going to save 15% off right away on your holiday shopping. Hilarious, all natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. I got a new gift box here from Bubble Genius.
I did too. They sent Peanut an ice cream cone. So on the top, it's a chocolate ice cream, like a soft serve ice cream, and it smells like chocolate. I gave it to her. And she's smelling it, and she goes, "Oh my God, Daddy, how do they do that?" I said, "I don't know." And she said, "That's why they call him Bubble Genius." I was like, "Oh, what a great commercial!" Isn't that great?
That's all, yeah. Well, now we gotta have. Maybe I need to record Peanut saying some sort
she
of line about
it.
Bubble
Genius. She's shy as she will not do it.
Well, I got here Forever Amber, Flying Amber Soap. This has got amber scent. Of course, it's sulfate free. Tested on human beans. Totally vegan, made in Hollywood, and it's actually like an amber soap with a gigantic rubber fly inside of it. I got that from Bubble Genius, and let's see what else here. Oh yeah, very popular and very cool kind of product here. It's just the fortune cookies in the actual little plastic fortune cookie thing in the, like, you know, the Chinese food container with the little metal, you know, the little metal handle on there. Smart cookies, fortune cookie soap set, green tea scent, and there's movie quotes in there. Movie quotes. Maybe we could convince Bubble Genius to add, "These chickens have large talons."
They have what?
I don't understand a word you just said. And then I got an American flag soap. Voting soap. So.
Yeah, and they instead of the flying amber, they sent me one with a marijuana leaf in it. So awesome.
I wonder why.
Huh. I was just up in my drying my drying den the other day, cleaning it out for the season. So,
hey, bud, but, what's your problem?
I know that, dude.
I know.
Having some pizza. Learn about Cuba. Having some food.
That's right.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
Right. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. I swear to God, I catch any of you, walking into a Walmart to buy shit for the holidays, I'm going to slap you silly.
Yeah.
Slap you silly.
Yeah, it's, you know, this year's project. Last year I made Peanut a dollhouse, and it became the project that ate my life for about 6 months. It wasn't even ready until her birthday, which is, you know, months later. This year I'm making her a children's book based on her favorite stuffed animal. So taking photos of her stuffed animal against a giant piece of green construction paper for my green screen and learning how to key that out and put him in all kinds of fancy situations in the Photoshops. So handmade gifts for Peanut this year.
Yeah. I've seen bits and pieces of what you've been working on. It's actually well-crafted. I mean, nicely done Photoshop work there.
It's turning out really well. I'm learning all kinds of crazy Photoshop tricks. I've got this little bear, she calls him Buds. And I swear to God, that's not because her father grows marijuana. I promise you that she has no idea about that. She just calls him Buds for some reason. But I put him in all these little poses. I use safety pins, to put him in all these little poses. And then I just key out erase the pens, and I put him next to gargoyles on Notre Dame, and all kinds of cute little. Put him out in a little field with some rabbits. All of Peanut's favorite things, I've got him doing, and then I'm writing a little poem, you know, like a rhyming verse to go with it. So, yeah. I've got to find double-sided laser copy paper, like paper that I can print on both sides, because regular paper isn't working. So somebody out there knows how to do some desktop publishing, give me a ring.
See, right there you said both sides, and instantly my blood pressure went up. I mean, it's just like, it's like Pavlovian now. Someone says both sides, you just go,
both sides,
you.
Yeah. The false. Yeah, so you were pretty disappointed with Stewart and his whole milquetoast rally for nonsense?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. No, I was, you know, I, Bill Maher had, I think, the best summation of it. I mean, I wrote about it myself a little bit, but Bill Maher really kind of nailed it. And, you know, with the line, if you're going to have a rally and 200,000 people are going to show up, make it about something.
Yeah. And the best line in that rant was when he said that Stewart's crowd was double the size of Beck's, but they weighed the same.
Yeah, right.
That was the best. I laughed out loud.
That was great.
Showing my teeth in that one.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the Bill Maher, you know, it's the, he does sort of an op-ed at the end of an op-ed. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but he does a thing at the end of New Rules, and it was really great. It was really great this week. It was a good show all around. It was a good show all around.
Yeah, except that Issa was there. And
Daryl Issa.
Issa, whatever. I can't look at that fucking guy.
Yeah, he's a two-faced son of a bitch, isn't he? I mean, he's about to go full McCarthy on the Obama administration.
I don't know. It looks like Sully had a thing the other day where it looks like he's backtracking quite a bit on some of his hyperboles. So I really think we're looking at just gridlock beyond gridlock now, when these guys realize they have to fucking pony up now and own some of their stupid. Yep. You know, the people that voted, they're just like, where's do something, and they're just gonna stand there with their thumbs up their asses. It's gonna be great to watch. I'm really excited about the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. I mean, I'm most excited really about watching the election. I mean, just watching, and it was just gonna be so satisfying, as opposed to 2008, which drove me to drink. I mean, it was just really insane. Where, you know, I couldn't enjoy the Republican battle because the fucking Democrats were so, because that whole thing was so fucked up that, you know, there was no enjoying it. This time, our guy's already got the nominee. We already know who's going to be running for the Democrats. It's going to be the president, and he's going to go. But the Republicans, I mean, it's just going to be like monkeys flinging poop at each other. I mean,
it really is. I mean, it's going to be a debacle.
Right.
And, you know, unless some serious changes, they've got not even a year now. I mean, they've got about 6 months, because the election, it'll start kicking in, you know, in about 6 months. They've got no time to get their leadership act together. I mean, where the hell is the leadership of the RNC? Where is it? Where is the centralized leadership of the Republican Party? There is none.
Yeah.
They've got no time to mobilize a coherent message. That's why it's going to be such a clusterfuck. There is no cohesive Republic. There is no centralized Republican Party right now.
Right. The Republican Party, I mean, Dick Armey is basically controlling the whole fucking thing. I mean, that's the big thing. It's Dick Armey and then, Karl Rove DeMint and Ed Gillespie trying to horn in on that a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, Dick Armey basically is running Dick Armey is sort of the, if you want to get conspiratorial, I mean, Dick Armey is basically running the Tea Party. I mean, that's exactly how it's kind of functioning from a financial point of view.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm sticking by my prediction that the lack of, the Tea Party candidates that did win are going to, I mean, freshmen, these new insurgent freshmen congressmen never do anything. I mean, they can't. I mean, just by the rules of seniority and the way things work, they just, I mean, Franken has been really amazing given, his new guy status. He's really just gone balls out, which is so nice to see. I mean, if everybody did the Franken thing, things may actually happen in Congress, right? Mm-hmm. But the Tea Party candidates that got there are going to be so ineffective, and the lack of crazy representation, whoever the nominee comes out of 2012 is going to have to be just an insane person. Yeah. And that's why I can't wait. It's just going to have to be nuts, because mm-hmm. Romney's nowhere near nutty enough for them.
Yeah, you think the Tea Party is going to rally around Mitt Romney?
Fuck no. A Mormon Obamacare supporter, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Romney care. I mean, they'll hang him with that.
Totally.
And he's a Mormon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to come down to who's going to lose the least against President Obama. Because I'm fairly confident in Obama's reelection.
Oh, there's absolutely no doubt about it.
Although, I mean, the fly in the ointment could be this deficit commission again. And I'm sitting here looking at the different recommendations here. I was going to run through them, some of them real quick. Index retirement age to longevity. Increase the retirement age to qualify for Social Security to age 69 by 2075. It seems like a long way off.
That's a long way off. I mean, that's beyond the threshold for cataclysmic ice cap melting. I mean, we'll all be dead by then.
Right.
I mean, you and I will be dead by, I don't really, but Peanut, good Lord, they may be under 10 feet of water by then.
Yeah. They're going to index yearly increases to inflation rather than wages on Social Security.
Is there anything in there about removing the cap?
Well, increase the Social Security contribution ceiling
to $1 billion?
While people only pay Social Security taxes on the first $106,800 of their wages today, that's only about 86% of the total potentially taxable wages. The co-chairs suggest raising the ceiling to capture 90% of wages.
Ugh, they just take the fucking ceiling off. That, I'll tell you what.
Right.
Full disclosure here, there is a point, and we're coming up on it, in the year where I cross that ceiling and my paycheck gets a little happier for like the last 8-9 weeks of the year, when I'm over that threshold and I've done my little contribution, it makes absolutely no difference in my life. I go, oh, look at that, it went up $1.25, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If I can't imagine if my salary was 3, 5, 8 times that, the absolute nonsense number that would be. Like, you'd just be like, oh, look, I'm making an extra. We just have no concept of wealth in this country. We just have the proles, the middle class. We just have no concept of what real wealth is and how meaningless it would be to these people if you just eliminated that cap.
Yeah,
they've got to do that like tomorrow. I mean, that would make Social Security solvent pretty much immediately, wouldn't it? I mean, it just ridiculous.
Absolutely, absolutely, and the fact that Social Security is somehow insolvent now is a bullshit.
Well,
lie anyway.
It is.
Here are three things that kind of hit close to home, though. This is bullshit. I mean, you know exactly where this is coming. This isn't coming from the liberal members of the Deficit Commission. One, eliminate NASA funding for commercial space flight. Well, maybe. I don't agree with that, but that could come from either one of the camps.
I think we need to turn. I personally, as far as science is concerned, I think we need to redirect. I love Hubble and the deep space probing and whatnot, but I think we need to redirect towards the quantum now and deal more, if fun things more like CERN and fucking positronic colliders and Ghostbusters weapons and
fucking
things like that.
Fucking Star Trek transporters. Come on, guys.
Yeah, dude.
Already, please?
Not, that's where the next that's where the big secrets are now. We've done the macro, now we have to do the micro.
That's right.
I want to see more mini Big Bangs in labs in Switzerland is what I want to do.
Star Trek transporters. Get me out of that sapien tube, that flying death trap.
Yeah, I want my shit transported by 2075.
That's right.
And I will deal with the fly consequences. I think that would be pretty cool.
You ever see, you ever read the Stephen King short story called The Jaunt?
Absolutely.
One of my favorites. It's from Skeleton Crew. It's the guy invents it's almost like a doorway with like a force field where you walk in one side and then you immediately walk out a second doorway on the other side.
Yep.
Like there are two doorways.
Dan Simmons in a science fiction series called Hyperion called them Farcasters. Mm-hmm. And they were gateways with black holes and singularities in them.
Yeah.
And one side was one planet and the other side was another. And you just walked through them. There's people with Farcasters in their houses where their bedroom was on one planet and their living room was on another entire planet.
Right.
It was awesome. I was like, oh, I just want a Farcaster so bad. Someone get me a Farcaster.
That. I want that. Now, here was the catch in The Jaunt in this short story was that if you went in there awake, it would seem like you were in there for an eternity and you would come out the other side just totally insane.
Yeah.
Like completely like 1,000 years old and you know, like completely mad.
Yeah.
So what you would have to do is you would have to be sedated and then they would sedate you and then they'd stick you in and you'd come out the other side and you'd be like, hey, oh great, I'm here.
Oh yeah.
You know, no problem.
Always a twist in a Stephen King book.
That's right. Right.
He's got a new compilation of short stories out this week, I think.
You know, the other good short story in Skeleton Crew was Survivor Type.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the few fiction books I took to college with me, and I read it cover to cover.
Yeah. This is one of his best works.
Great. Skeleton Crew. He's one of the great short story and novella writers of all time, as far as I'm concerned.
Some of the best movies of our lifetime have been adapted from Stephen King short stories.
Absolutely. Shawshank, Green Mile.
Totally. Let's see here. Here's suck this, you fucknuts. Require the Smithsonian museums to start charging entrance fees and raise fees at the national parks.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely outrageous.
Thank you.
Fuck that.
Right. Thanks, Deficit Commission, for the additional $5 that we'll get from that.
Fuck that. If I would never set foot in the Smithsonian again if they charged me to go in there. It was one of the great, except the archives. I would pay to get in the archives.
Yeah.
But it's one of the great, great things about Washington, D.C. is you, no matter who you are, no matter what caste or you know, no matter who you are, you can walk into that place and spend an entire month, you know, buried in culture for free.
Yeah.
That fuck that.
Right.
That needs to go.
That is
a clear pander to the douchebag crew.
The national parks and the museums, the Smithsonian museums, everything that you can kind of go to. I mean, literally, you can go drive into Washington, D.C., or you can just get on a metro. You pay a couple of dollars, you get on the metro, you go to Washington, D.C., you've got literally a day's worth of free learning and entertainment here. And I mean, it's literally, I mean, free. You just go in. And
from every walk of historical, from, you know, from air and space to the archives to the Library of Congress.
Art museums.
Art museums. Yeah. The National Portrait Gallery. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. The, you know, American history. The American Indian thing. Have you been over to that one yet?
It's right off
the Capitol there.
It's by the Arboretum. Yeah. It's like right next to the National Arboretum.
Beautiful building. Yeah. Beautiful. And just an amazing museum.
Damn, yeah, I got to go see that. But I mean, what this does, I mean, essentially, these are the Republicans saying that the Smithsonians and the Smithsonian Museums and the national parks are the purview of people who have money.
Yeah, kiss my ass.
If you don't have money, you're fucked. If you don't have money to spend, you don't have disposable income, you can't go to the Smithsonian anymore. You can't go to the national parks anymore. You're fucked. You know, you're fucked. You got to go back to eating your barrel of cheese wads from the dollar store.
Yeah, let's start charging for libraries, too. Just make them, you know, sublet all public libraries to Barnes & Noble and Borders.
And here's the, this is the, sort of the non-wonky stuff that's been pissing me off, but eliminate funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Oh, God. Yep. Here we go again. And the NEA, is there anything in there about the NEA?
I'm on Digby's blog right now, and she didn't
one
list
half
anything.
Of 1%.
Yeah, I don't see anything.
Costs everybody 8 cents a year. Boy, let's cut that out. How about we double that funding? How about that?
Yeah, and in the interest of cutting the deficit, for fuck's sake, really, because of the deficit, are you kidding me? You know, if this is like, okay, we're gonna start charging $1 to get in the Smithsonian so we can cure cancer.
Yeah.
You know, okay, okay. $1, okay.
I might consider that one.
Fine.
How about we cut an entire tank program and keep the Smithsonian active?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, they are going to be cutting defense a little bit in there, too.
They better just go the fuck after it with a machete.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, I understand the jobs thing, but look, we don't need a 1982 military in 2010.
Right.
Let's cut a few of those submarines out of the budget, shall we?
Yeah.
When's the next time we need a fucking submarine?
That's right.
In the desert.
And we need more jet fighters that can engage in dogfights because, you know,
Top Gun. Yeah.
All those terrorists with their
those cave dwelling terrorists with
supersonic
their
jets.
MiGs.
Yeah, their MiGs, yeah. Right?
Yikes.
So, you know, I wanted to mention, too, the other big news of the week is that Zach Roloff went to flirting school on Little People, Big World.
What have I told you about this make-believe show?
Poor Zach Roloff. This is the dwarf son on Little People, Big World. And he's just got, you know, you feel bad for him because he's got sort of dwarf self-esteem issues where he's, you know, he's in his 20s. He's never dated or anything like that. So his whole family ganged up on this kid. Like, literally ganged up on him and were forcing him to learn how to date. So his brother, his twin, fraternal twin brother, Jeremy, took him to a flirting class. First of all, they have flirting classes. That was the first shocking thing. And they took him to it and filmed him in it. Mm. You want to talk about the epitome of embarrassment. So, and then they sent him into a grocery store with his phone number on a slip of paper, and he was supposed to pick up a woman in the grocery store. Of course, he was wandering around like, I'm mortified. This is so embarrassing.
This is going to be the first dwarf serial killer. And be able to go back to this footage see right there, that's when it started.
It's going to be pumpkin season, and Zach Roloff's going to be at the top of the Noah's Ark with a high-powered rifle just picking off pumpkin buyers. Hey.
I still don't believe in the show.
Yeah, it rules. It rules. But it's the last season. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. Fudge with us. Fudge with us. We'll see you next week at the Bob and Evelyn Show. Take care, everybody. Bye.
You dicks.